Welcome into the Weekly Rut. This is Andy Larson, Eric Walden coming at you. It's 2 hours now after the trade deadline. The Jazz didn't do anything.
Mike Conley is still on the team.
Yeah, so are the other players.
Oh, yeah. Who cares about them, though?
I think most people.
Fair enough. but they weren't going to provide the kind of depth pieces that Mike Conley could have.
Man, why are you the way that you are? We'll get into your straw manning of even the straw man. Like, no one is even making this argument that you're trying to argue against, but whatever.
I spent my hours on Twitter waiting to fly to Portland this week have convinced me otherwise. But you may continue.
Anyway, we'll talk about the Jazz not making any moves at trade deadline. We'll also talk about the other moves that did happen around the NBA. And then, you know, we'll get into this whole five-game losing streak and, you know, how the Jazz might be bad now. So, hooray! What a podcast for you guys to listen to.
Darn
first,
it.
Trade deadline. No one in the entire world should be surprised if the Jazz didn't make any moves. And I know that they've lost five straight games and needed to get better. And yet, the truth of the matter is that they had nobody that anybody wanted to trade for other than, like, the players that obviously you guys want to keep. So, like, no, nobody wanted Mike Conley in his 2 years and $60 million. And no, nobody wanted Ed Davis in his 2 years, $9 million. And no, nobody wanted Emmanuel Mudiay for the next 2 months. Like, Emmanuel Mudiay is not anybody's choice for backup point guard. and if you have any other options, like Shabazz Napier was on the market, well, go get him instead, because Shabazz Napier is probably a better player than Emmanuel Mudiay. Ed Davis, everyone has three backup centers, and you can get Andre Drummond for the low price of John Henson and a second round pick. Like, you're not gonna get value for Ed Davis.
Don't you dare forget Brandon Knight.
And Brandon Knight.
Yeah. That's
It does not. It makes the deal worse. But both of those guys are expiring, you know, so like you can get Andre Drummond for an expiring contract and a second round pick.
Yeah, I mean, that's partly because he was owed what, like $28.6 million. He has a player option for that or something like that.
Yeah, agreed. So he's got a big option for next year.
Yeah. But still, yeah, centers were not a hot commodity at this trade deadline.
Can get Alex Len while dumping a salary.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you can get Scala Labissiere and $2 million.
And I don't know if Scala Labissiere or Ed Davis is better at this point. Yeah, right. So, yeah, exactly. If you can get Scala, that's a perfect example. Thank you for coming up with it.
You're welcome. I could see you flailing around a little bit.
I was.
Searching for the perfect one.
Scala is the perfect one. Like, Scala is like a reasonably capable backup center, and the Hawks got paid $2 million to take him on. Now, like, that only worked because they had the cap space. So, like, that's why you might have wondered if you're a Jazz fan looking for a big man, you're like, well, why didn't the Jazz get a big man? Clearly, the Jazz need a big man. Well, the problem is, if you're Portland, they were just looking to dump money, right? Like, so Ed Davis, even though they like Ed Davis up in Portland, they just wanted to get closer to being under the tax so they could save, like, $8 million or whatever it ended up being. Like, that's just dumping money on a team that has cap space, and the Jazz don't have any cap space because they signed Bogey and traded for Mike Conley. So that's how that goes.
Yeah, that's exactly what that was. Yeah, the Blazers had a luxury tax bill coming, and they're like, if we can get someone to take Skull, like, we'll have less of a tax to pay. And so it is that Atlanta winds up with three centers in one trade deadline. You know, it's like, There's a reason why these things happen. I mean, obviously, you know, yeah, Clint Capella, he's pretty good. Andre Drummond, he's got some talent. But, like, yeah, nobody was, like, taking on centers with other than that first one, other than the Capella deal, with the idea of this guy is going to be a valued part of our future.
And even then, the Rockets had to give up Capella and a first-round pick in order to get Covington.
Right.
Who is an older player who's about as good at a different position.
Yeah. I mean, you really address this very well throughout the course of the week, both in your trade deadline primer you did a few days ago and then again in your triple team last night, where you just put out there that the Jazz don't have a ton of assets that other teams were wanting that would enable them to, you know, add a piece around the margins like fans want. Like, the move they made was Jordan Clarkson for Dante Exum.
Which, by the way, I think looks like a really good move today.
Yeah. I saw a few Cleveland fans like, putting it out there that, can we please have Clarkson back? Because Dante is not doing well.
Dante has not done well. And also, honestly, that the Sixers had to give up 3 second-round picks for Alec Burks and Glenn Robinson III.
Yeah.
Kind of shows that that's good value for the Jazz to not only get those guys, or not only to get Clarkson, but then to dump a guy like Exum, I think is a good piece of business by the Jazz. What I do not think is a good piece of business by the Jazz, and we have to be fair here, is to say that the way they gave up that second pick in the Mike Conley deal to so that it would be most likely convey in 2022, but not certainly, meaning that there are pick protections over the next two seasons,
yep.
made it impossible for them to trade this year's pick, and therefore made it impossible for them to get, you know, a essentially difference maker in this year's trade market deadline. Now, trade deadline market. Now, that being said, I don't know that there's anyone out there for a Utah's first-round pick that you can go out and get, and you feel really good about the Jazz being a better team. You know, like, the players traded for first-round picks today are, there was the Capella, Robert Covington deal, but both of those picks were better than the Jazz's. And, of course, like, Houston, Denver got Houston's pick, but had to give up Malik Beasley, which, you know, I don't know that that really moves the needle for the Jazz. There was a D'Angelo Russell for Andrew Wiggins deal, but the Jazz don't have like a big contract that they could have traded D'Angelo Russell for, you know, like that doesn't work.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I'm kind of down on D'Lo as a player, but anyway.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going around. Clippers get Marcus Morris for basically a first round pick.
A first and a pick swap.
Yeah, but I mean, those picks are never going to swap.
It might.
Clippers and Knicks? Like, it's the Clippers trading a pick of their own, isn't it? Like, what would have to happen for the Knicks to finish ahead of the Clippers over these next few years?
Anything. Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah, and then Mo Harkless thrown in there to make the salaries work.
But again, Mo Harkless by himself has some value.
He's something.
Yeah. And again, like, does Marcus Morris really make you feel that much better about the Jazz? Like, definitely Marcus Morris is better than George Niang.
I mean,
but I kind of hate Marcus Morris as a player, too.
If you're looking on Twitter these last few hours, Marcus Morris is, like, the salvation of Clipper basketball.
It depends if you are...
He's the guarantor of the Larry O'Brien trophy coming home.
It depends if you are Bleacher Report or, like, an NBA account that knows things. Not to hate on Bleacher Report.
No, it's like, just interesting. Like, Marcus Morris puts up some numbers on a dreadful Knicks franchise, and all of a sudden he's this, like, absolute, unequivocal difference maker. Is he a nice player? Yeah, he's a nice player. He's shooting the ball really well this year, like, far better than anyone could have anticipated. Does that absolutely guarantee that the Clippers are, like, stacked beyond all competitive levels now? No. I don't.
Yeah, the Chris Haynes tweet that was like, the extremely versatile lineup of Pat Bev, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, Marcus Morris, and Ivica Zubac. Like, all right. I don't see a lot of versatility there, actually. Like,
yeah.
Marcus Morris is definitely only a 4. Zubac, definitely only a 5. Paul George and Kawhi can both play the 2 and the 3. Congratulations. Like, that's not versatile.
No.
That's one of the least versatile lineups and starting lineups in the NBA. Like, if you want versatility, like, the Utah Jazz have more versatility, quote unquote, but
right.
It doesn't, you know, that doesn't matter. If you want versatility, like Houston Rockets, you want versatility, Milwaukee Bucks, like it's dumb, but whatever.
Yeah.
That's how that goes. Are there, so, you know, overall, not surprised the Jazz didn't make any moves. Don't think they would have helped really if they did. And,
right.
You know, I kind of the one deal that seemed semi-plausible was Ed Davis for Damari Carroll. Damari Carroll's owed 3 years, $20 million over the next 3 years, although the third year is not completely guaranteed. It basically would have been the Jazz taking on Damari Carroll's contract and in exchange for Ed Davis's contract and maybe hoping they could have made something out of Damari, even though Damari hasn't been a really useful player for 3 of the last 4 years.
I mean, Damari Carroll did not make the Spurs rodeo road trip. Like, they left him home.
Yeah, that's not good.
He's not playing for them hardly at all. And I understand Ed Davis isn't playing for the Jazz hardly at all, but, like, so you're going to swap one guy not playing hardly at all for another guy not playing hardly at all? And
I mean,
that's
maybe.
And that's going to, like, I guess theoretically.
But then you're just paying more money for it. Like, that's right. If they're at the same salary, it's like, sure, whatever. Like,
right.
Who cares?
Yeah,
but
I
might as well make the experiment. And Jazz fans like Damari Carroll and, like, Ed Davis.
I get there's, like, sentimentality involved because, you know, oh, the return of the Junkyard Dog. But, like, if the point of this exercise is to, like, make a move that definitively potentially makes your team better, like, I don't know
no.
how you can argue that Damari, you know, missing out on Damari Carroll is some great travesty.
Agreed. I'm on your side here, and I also say that, like, that's also a low-risk move, right? Like,
sure,
low risk, low reward is you make those kind of trades. Maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
But if it's for more money, low risk, low reward, medium cost, then no, that's dumb.
Yeah,
don't
it makes,
do that.
Yeah, with the extra money, that bumps up the risk factor a little bit.
Good analysis,
so,
Eric.
Thank you.
Any other deals you want to talk about from around the NBA?
The D'Angelo Wiggins one was really kind of, I don't know. That I mean, obviously we've heard all season long that the Wolves had interest in getting D'Angelo Russell. They pursued him hard. I mean, we've all heard the story of, like, the famous helicopter ride around Minneapolis, and he was all set to sign there. And then all of a sudden his agent said, oh, hey, by the way, the Warriors are interested. And he's like, screw this Minnesota crap. Let's go to San Francisco. And a few minutes later, you know, so much for that. I guess I'm intrigued to see, like, there's this obviously, you know, you got the sense that the Golden State organization just never felt like D'Angelo was a great long-term fit there.
Time out.
What?
All we heard after they signed D'Angelo Russell was, oh my goodness, we just can't believe how much we love D'Lo and how much the Warriors' blood is in D'Lo and how much he's going to be such a big piece for our future. Like, anyone with half a brain could tell that was a lie,
right?
But they were lying to us, and so I just want to be clear,
okay,
that's not what we've heard from the Warriors organization. What we've heard from the Warriors organization was indeed BS.
Okay, continue. Yeah, fair enough. They were saying, you know, they were publicly saying he's a great fit and we're happy to have him. For anyone who could, like,
Eric,
who is at all capable of reading between the lines.
I just said that.
I know.
Okay.
You interrupted me to make the point.
This is true.
So now let me get back to my point.
Okay.
Anyone who could read between the lines at all could discern that was crap. And that they viewed it as, okay, we're going to lose KD. Let's bring in an asset with some future value that we can then subsequently flip for something. You get a top three.
Which makes sense for the Warriors.
Yeah, you get a top three protected pick in 2021. If you don't wind up getting that one, it's totally unprotected in 2022. I understand that. I guess my thing is, like, I just don't want any part of that Andrew Wiggins contract. Like, he had the one good month, and then he reverted back to being Andrew Wiggins. And now all these people who are like, well, him being around Draymond Green and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson will... It's like, no. Like, guys who just don't care don't suddenly start caring because they're around better players.
See, for example, D'Angelo Russell.
Correct.
So, that to me is the thing. Is like,
so, yeah, that was like this huge...
You're swapping semi-similar contracts for... and getting a pick back. So I think it's a good piece of business by the Warriors, even though, like, hey, I'm impressed that Gerson Rosas got off both Andrew Wiggins and Gorgui Dieng's contract in the same day.
Yeah.
But, like, is the D'Lo Karl-Anthony Towns team really going anywhere? Like, no.
No. But I guess it makes Karl-Anthony Towns a little happier in the interim for all that matters. I mean,
but
who cares? Until he starts playing defense, that franchise isn't going anywhere anyway.
He hasn't won a game in 80 days.
He puts up really pretty stat lines and, like, doesn't impact their winning at all.
Let me say that again. He hasn't won a game since before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
He went all of December, all of January, and admittedly hurt for some of that part, but the Timberwolves have not won a game in which he's played since Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Before Thanksgiving.
Let's see. What else? We kind of already addressed the Drummond trade. How do you feel about the Miami Heat acquiring Andre Iguodala? That one, along with the the Morris one seemed to be the two that people were like, ooh, this could potentially swing the balance of power. And I just don't, I don't see it with in either case.
Yeah, I agree with that. I thought, I wish I knew who said this on Twitter, but basically this is Bam Adebayo's third year, right? Like, yeah. What's the rush? Why are you giving up a good young player in Justice Winslow for Andre Iguodala, Jay Crowder, and Solomon Hill for you to compete only this year? I don't get it. Like,
yep.
Now for the Grizzlies, like, getting only Justice Winslow and spending $40 million next year is a lot. But like, and so I get it kind of from that monetary perspective as well. But I just don't know that that helps you a ton, and I don't know that they'll be that good. I think they're a good playoff team. I think they're a second round team in the East.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm not blown away by.
And I think this trade probably helps their odds this year.
Yeah.
But by like not their championship odds, you know. I don't know.
I still don't see them getting past the Bucks.
Oh no.
Yeah. So it's like that being the case, like. What's the point?
Also, Andre Iguodala is 36 years old.
Yeah.
He hasn't played basketball in 8 months.
This is kind of an underreported component of this, right?
He wasn't, like, tremendous for the Warriors last year.
Yes. Thank you. Like, he was already slipping.
He made a cool play against Lillard in the playoffs in game two.
Yeah. He's already slipping. He's old. He's been sitting out all season. I honestly thought it would have been funny if they hadn't found a deal for him and then like held on to him and then released him like a few hours after.
Oh, the Rajah Bell move?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been kind of funny just because, I mean, I don't know. I always get a little annoyed with guys who are like, ugh, I'm too good to play for a rebuilding franchise.
Yeah, I get why people are mad at Iggy for that, but it's also in the Grizzlies' best interest that he doesn't play either. You know, like.
Well, if he's coming in with that attitude.
Hey,
yeah.
If he's coming in with that attitude and just as an asset,
was better for them long term that they, you know, that they played the other guys.
Here's
instead.
The thing: there
it,
were but. There were two very real possibilities that Iggy would have no value, and that is Iggy gets hurt because he's a 36-year-old man,
sure.
Or Iggy comes out and plays as a 36-year-old man, and it turns out he's washed.
Sure.
And those are pretty darn likely possibilities. So now all of a sudden you're able to make this deal and maybe get Justice Winslow back, who I think is a good young player.
Yeah.
I think it's the right move for the Grizzlies organization as well to just send him home for the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I did. From the Memphis side of things, I agree with you that like taking on $40 million worth of salary is a lot. But at the same time, it's like people are saying, oh, why would you take on that much salary? The response being, well, like what were they going to do in free agency instead? Nothing. Oh, but you could use that space to like take on bad contracts and acquire – you know, good young assets as a result. And it's like, isn't that theoretically what they did in this exact trade?
Sure, but $40 million is a lot for Justice Winslow.
It is a lot. But
I that's too
I get
much,
that.
I think.
I get that. But they also got the first-round pick to take him from Golden State.
Yeah.
And then you get Justice Winslow on top of that.
Yeah, but like, all right, so what happened in the past doesn't matter, right? Like, you're trying to make good deals today.
Yeah, I get it.
And so, to me,
it was a lot, but
it's a lot.
That was the play.
It's a big bet on Justice Winslow that I'm not sure his play is deserved.
Yeah, fair enough. Anything else? Really, the only other thing that I want to touch on is the fact that like everyone who the Kings ever decide to give a big deal to in free agency, they wind up like trading months later. Like this last summer, it was Trevor Ariza and Dwayne Dedman, and they're now both gone. And I guess I'm a jerk and a bad person, but I think it's hilarious.
I don't think it's hilarious.
There's
I don't know. I feel
franchises
bad for Kings
that
fans.
Just like they can't get out of their own way.
If there was any like ego there left, I would agree with that. But there's not. Like
it's just
feel
sad
bad
at
for
this
him.
Point.
It's just sad. Like yeah, I don't know. If but the Lakers did that, that would bring me great joy. But. Maybe that's why you feel the way you do is because of the Lakers Kings rivalry.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It just and that's the thing. I guess I shouldn't feel that way because yeah, it is the Kings and like
right,
they're
like,
sad and what have they ever done
to
me?
Yeah, why do you want them to be sad?
It's more a thing of like in the moment, like we can all recognize that it's a bad idea for them to give like $15 million to Trevor Ariza and $40 million to Dewayne Dedmon, but then they go and do it anyway. And shockingly, 2 months later, like, oh, well, those didn't work out. And it's like, I fail to understand how certain franchises just can cycle through so many bad coaches, cycle through so many bad GMs, and just like never accidentally stumble upon one competent person to
Well,
to
they
turn
did.
Them around.
They stumbled on Mike Malone.
And then what happened there?
And then they fired him.
Right. Because the person who oversaw him was
So that's the thing.
Uncompetent.
The Kings have stumbled upon good players and good people. And
okay, I guess they can't stumble upon multiple people simultaneously who fit
even
that bill.
Like, I don't know.
Or they haven't since the early 2000s.
De'Aaron anyway. Fox is good. Buddy Hield is good.
Yeah.
Bogey Squared is good.
Marvin Bagley is not Luka Doncic.
No, he's not, right. Like, but, you know, I just think it takes a lot, you know, and I'm not saying that the Kings are making good decisions, but like, yeah, stumbling upon talent is not going to get it done.
No.
Let's talk Jazz. Jazz have lost 5 in a row. Last night was the worst one. Last night was really bad. The Nuggets reporters were telling me after the game that the Nuggets have a crazy record in back-to-backs. I think they're like 8-3 this year on the second night of back-to-backs, and I think they won like 10 out of 11 last year or something crazy like that, which is impressive. Like, something about the Nuggets on the second night of a back-to-back, I don't know, they bring more effort, they bring more energy, whatever it is. Somehow, they break the rules of fatigue. Probably some of those are, you know, at home, and so therefore other teams are altitude sickness as well, but like, they turn these schedule losses into wins, and they're very proud of that, and I think you have to give their players and Mike Malone a lot of credit for that. That being said...
My favorite phrase ever.
7 players. 2 of them were PJ Dozier, who's okay, actually, and Vlatko Kanchar, who is not okay. He was very bad. And then Gary Harris, who was play-acting a very bad player.
0-13,
correct,
I think he finished?
Yes, yeah. So you're really playing against 4 players and you still managed to lose a game. And honestly, like, the defense was fine. You only gave up 98 points, but you only scored 95, even though you shot the ball much better than the Nuggets did. You were just so bad at the other stuff that, you lost, and you lost a 15-point lead from the third, a 10-point lead from the fourth. And your best player, your best offensive player in Donovan Mitchell was making just terrible decisions nonstop. And your best defensive player was just getting owned physically by Nikola Jokic in the paint for multiple offensive rebounds and putbacks. And Bojan Bogdanović can't box anyone out whatsoever, and nor can he jump for a rebound. Nor can Joe Ingles, for that matter. I struggle to figure. I don't know who tries less, Joe or Bogey. Probably Joe.
Joe puts in less effort at it. Bogey's just like
less effective.
Yeah, more bad at it.
I might agree with that.
Yeah.
Mike Conley was fine.
Conley was pretty good. I mean, he did have the 2 late turnovers, but prior to that,
yeah, that's true.
But still, among the guys last night, he was pretty good. Jordan Clarkson was
really good.
Although Jordan Clarkson, like, dribbling around in circles for 19 seconds.
That was my favorite possession. Just because, yeah, that's all it was him dribbling around in circles and being like, oh, okay, I've got a layup now. Yeah. And it's a sad state of affairs when Jordan Clarkson is your most effective offensive player.
Yeah.
Not defensive. Woof.
Yeah.
Could be worse.
Yeah. No, this loss was definitely their worst loss of the season. Like, this was worse than any of those blowouts in November, because at least, you know, those are bad, but you're playing against 7 players, and we've just established that it's really kind of like 4 players. They're on the second night of a back-to-back, which I know you just mentioned, like, how good they've been, but they're playing their 3rd game in 4 nights. You're coming in having lost 4. Like, if ever there was a night to like show what you're capable of and put it all out there and take it to a team, like it should have been this night. And then, yeah, Donovan's got this weird thing where he's ticked off that Torrey Craig like shut him down last time, and so well, I'm gonna go one on one with Torrey Craig and force up bad looks. I didn't get to interview Donovan last night. I wasn't there for the post game scrum because I had a print deadline and I was reworking my story. But looking at the quote sheet, you know, him talking about the biggest thing for me is just trying to make the same plays I have been. I can pretty much say every missed shot except for probably two and every decision I made was the same one I'd make if I had 30 points. I don't regret any of my decisions. You should regret a whole lot of your decisions from that game. Like, you were going one-on-one in situations that you shouldn't have. You're forcing up early bad looks in a lot of situations where you shouldn't have. You were getting beat on defense with incredible ease.
He did say he regretted that part.
Okay, well, I'm glad he amended that statement then, because, like, it was just... And it wasn't even all him. Like, he was certainly bad enough, but then Rudy just got his butt kicked all over the court by Jokic last night. I mean, Rudy put up 16 and 14, and it was not a close matchup at all.
No, I think Rudy played better defense than that you know, than honestly Jokic's numbers give him credit for. Jokic had a bunch of jumpers, you know, a little bit of them. Well, honestly, a lot of them are tip your cap kind of things, like the game winner. Like, you know, you're not blocking that, but
right.
I do think that, you know, that all being said, the rebounds kind of just are so bad that, like,
right, like,
that makes up for
Denver
it.
Denver had, what, 13 offensive rebounds in that game?
Was it 13? I thought it was 11 for some reason. But anyway.
We can look it up.
It was many. And yeah, you just can't do that against a short team that only has that, you know, it was only Jokic and Torrey Craig.
I was correct. 13 okay. Offensive rebounds for Denver.
So,
6 from Jokic, 4 from Torrey Craig. Which, why is Torrey Craig getting 4 offensive rebounds?
Because he tries.
Right.
That
would have been nice.
I went and watched. I went and watched the Torrey Craig rebounds, and most of them were. There was only one with Rudy Gobert in the paint.
Yeah.
Most of them were with Jokic pulling Rudy out, and then the other guys have to get a rebound. And that's where Bogey, his lack of defensive rebounding really hurts. Yeah. So there's that. And also, Jordan Clarkson doesn't try on that end either, but that's a side note. I don't know what to make of it. Like, we've seen Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell is not a dumb person. Donovan Mitchell is a very smart person. So why does he continue to do dumb things is one of the factors of my life that stresses me out. The thing is, he learns during games too, sometimes, this game an exception, but you'll see him, we've seen how frequently he figures out a defense in the second half and just goes off because he gets it. Last night, and especially a week after playing the Nuggets, that didn't happen. And that's a little bit concerning. And I asked that question, you read the quote to earlier, I was a little bit concerned that he said, you know, I only made a couple wrong choices tonight. Like, I don't think so. I think he made a lot of wrong choices.
Yep.
Rudy just, you know, he's not ever going to be, like, the strongest and toughest guy. And also, he's just getting beat to spots on rebounds that it's just a focus thing. Like, first play of the game, getting beat on that rebound is rough. That's tough.
That you use the word focus, and they brought this up a lot, especially Rudy. They brought this up a lot last night, and this is what is just killing me right now. Like, why at this point are you still having issues with focus?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know,
I don't know.
Every game is losing streak. Oh, you know, we lost focus during that 27-1 stretch. We lost focus during, you know, when we blew that 15-point lead last night.
Right.
And it's like, I would think at this point.
Why, you dummies?
Know, like,
maybe focus.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we've talked about with Quinn, like, it's human nature. Like, It literally is impossible to be focused 100% of the time, every second. But you're having an awful lot of lack of focus.
No one's talking about this if this is a 2-game losing streak. Right. It's 5 now.
Yeah. Time to be concerned a little bit.
I do think also that this roster has flaws. Like, the bench is still not strong, right? Like, Jordan Clarkson actually has been a much better player than I think you or I thought. Maybe I'm putting my feelings onto you a little bit there. I was more skeptical of Clarkson than you were, but Clarkson has actually been a good addition. But, like, come on now. Like, you can't turn a nothing bench and add Jordan Clarkson to it and have it be a really good bench. Right. It's a pretty average bench. It's a below average bench. And when Donovan Mitchell's played with that bench unit, there's still no chemistry. So I think something has to change there. It is very my turn, your turn with that bench unit where, like, all right, this is Donovan Mitchell's possession. We're just going to see what Donovan does. And then it's Jordan Clarkson's possession. We're just going to see what he does for 18 seconds dribbling around in a circle. Like, all of the Jazz cohesion goes away for whenever that bench lineup is out there.
Yeah.
And I think you have to figure out what you're going to do to fix that. Now, really, you've got the choice of bringing Mike Conley off the bench, but, like, okay. I mean, you could do that. I think there are some upsides, honestly. But all of a sudden, you're playing Mike Conley probably 20 minutes a game instead of 30 minutes a game, and, you know, we'll see how good Mike Conley is. Maybe it helps him to play Mike Conley. Maybe it helps him to play, you know, 30 minutes a night, get him back into the rhythm that he's used to, and maybe you see better performance.
Right.
You can bench Joe Ingles again, which has some upsides in that you get Royce O'Neal into the starting lineup. And, you know, you basically have Joe run the second unit. Maybe he does better with Tony Bradley, who can actually roll and finish compared to Ed Davis. But Tony Bradley's a decent but not great screen setter. And, you know, you're still dealing with Joe off the bench, which may or may not have been the source of his problems. I kind of believe it's that he wasn't playing with a ruling big man and might be worth the experiment, but we'll see. Or you can, I mean, really, those are your two choices.
Yeah.
You're not benching Donovan, Bogey, or Rudy, obviously.
No. And I honestly think it'll probably come down to, like, maybe the Royce versus Joe thing in the starting lineup. I just don't see them bringing Mike off the bench.
I guess door number three is you, instead of having Donovan play the minutes with the second unit, you have Mike Conley or Bojan Bogdanovic play the minutes with the second
unit. And there is something to that. I mean, in theory, you know, Mike is accustomed to playing with not
terrible
a great
players.
Supporting cast from all those years in Memphis, so maybe that becomes a time.
But
where
also,
can,
yeah.
None of these are, like, perfect solutions. But
also, not to, but maybe a supporting cast was okay in Memphis last year.
Yeah,
like,
maybe.
You had Jaren Jackson Jr., and you had Marc Gasol for the first part of the year, and Jonas Valanciunas for the second part of the year. Like, Memphis has done kind of okay with those guys.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
like, John Morant's really good.
There's
but
no getting around the fact that the bench last night, other than Clarkson, was just, they did virtually nothing. You know, Royce, 1-for-4, 3 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists. Tony Bradley, 0-for-1, 3 rebounds. George Niang, 1-for-5, 3 points, 1 rebound. You know, it's like they were out there on the court. They were taking some shots. And other than that, they weren't making a whole lot of contribution.
Royce has irked me, actually, a little bit recently. He's not as good as defensively as some say.
He's been beaten a lot of late.
A lot.
Yeah.
Like, Eric Gordon scoring 50 isn't good.
Yeah,
Dame,
like,
scoring,
like,
50 is fine.
Like, Dame, yeah, it's Damian Lillard, and you're like, oh, well, what can you do? Like, Dame's murdering everyone, but
dying,
like,
on some of the screens he died on last night, then not switching. You know, like, there's just, like, weird issues where it's like, man, why can't you keep in front? Like, I thought you were good at this. Or, like, why aren't you? It's just weird lack of communication stuff that's happening with him. And yeah, for one of your best defenders, he's not like a playmaking defender, right? Like, he's not a big steal guy. He's not a big, like, in your face Marcus Smart type, you know?
Right.
But then you have to be a solid defender, and he hasn't been that.
Yeah.
So that's not
as
good.
You mentioned, dying on an awful lot of screens of late, and whole lot of miscommunications when, you know, between him and...
And if you're going to die on the screen, then you've got to call it out early and switch.
Yeah, exactly. So
or flop, quite frankly. Like, Mike Conley dies on a lot of screens, but he flops on some of them and gets offensive fouls.
It's a valuable veteran skill.
It is. Learn it.
Yeah.
Royce, you too could flop.
Yeah. There's no shame in that.
There's not.
I mean, maybe there is, but like, if it
I don't care.
Is to your benefit, who cares, right?
Someone else might shame you. I won't.
Yeah.
Be like, good heady play, son.
That's a veteran move right there. That's savvy.
Yeah.
Savvy. No, I think we've established, like Quinn saying last night, like, there's not just one thing. There's a whole lot of little things going on.
Quinn looked really frustrated last night.
Yeah, he did.
And I mean,
that was kind of the most demonstrative he's been during the course of this losing streak about things being wrong. You know, it's like he's never going to be a guy who like overtly throws guys under the bus because that's just not his style. But he made it clear that there are things going on that he doesn't think should still be an issue at this point.
We still haven't seen. There's still another level of Quinn mad in press conferences, and that is Quinn's State of the Union address mad,
yeah.
Where like he will go on a 6-minute rant about where the team is and how they need to improve XYZ ABC WQRSTU.
Would you like to throw in some letters at the Spanish alphabet also?
No, just the no.
Throw in a che, an aye.
But there's still one more level of Quinn madness. But hey, yeah. Maybe we'll see it Friday.
Right. We've got the Rockets here on Friday.
Nope.
Blazers?
Yes.
Okay. Rockets coming up shortly after that.
Sunday.
Sunday. I had the two transposed.
You're fine.
In my head. Yeah. So maybe Friday. Woohoo. Something to look forward to.
Yay. What a joyous time it is. yeah. But, oh, well, that's a joke. And, like, they'll probably be okay. Like, it just... Okay. The problem is, like, really, really, really good teams don't lose 5 games in a row.
Yeah.
And these were, like, as much as people talk about the schedule improving, and that's a cause of it, they've also played 2 sub-500 teams that aren't that good this year. Like, Portland's actually not that good this year. They're on a run. Great. But, like, eh. And the Spurs are straight up just not that good. I guess they've won, what, 3 of their last 5 or something, but...
Yeah, but then also, like...
They didn't have a Marcus Aldridge.
Denver's missing a bunch of their top guys. Like, that theoretically should be a time where you can beat a not full strength.
Literally
Denver
8
team.
Of their players they were missing, yeah.
Yeah. So...
8 as many players to be missing.
Yeah. Jazz are just playing bad right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
All the way around.
Will... How... What do you think for the future? What does this badness mean for the future? Does it mean that the Jazz will be bad in the playoffs too?
I still think they're a second-round team, depending on the matchup. Like, obviously, if they get someone who they just, like last year when they got matched up with the Rockets, you just knew that was going to be bad news because stylistically it was a terrible...
We'll see how they do against the Rockets on Sunday.
Yeah, we'll see. So, you know.
They are fresh out of centers, but, like, that didn't matter last time.
Of their own choosing, yeah. But, again, yeah, Daniel House seemed to make that not matter at all.
P.J. Tucker, really.
And P.J. Tucker as well. House, because he was getting a fair amount of offensive boards in that game. But I still think this team is talented enough. It can be a second-round team. I think we're seeing sufficient flaws that it's hard for me to think they get beyond that. But
then that's
I don't think they're as bad as they look right now.
But that's a failure if they're only a second round team.
Probably. I really am surprised that some of these moves they made this summer like didn't, you know, like everyone's talking about, oh, the Jazz needed to get, you know, some guy who could play 5 in small ball lineups and well, that theoretically should have been Jeff Green, and it just, like, he was terrible at it. He was terrible at lots of things. Ed Davis, like, we thought that would be a solid move, and then he just, you know, he's not a fit because of his complete and total lack of offensive ability.
Like, nothing ventured, nothing gained, so I get the moves.
Right. Like, in the moment, they made sense.
If you are Dennis Lindsay and Justin Zanuck, shouldn't you be somewhat cognizant of how a player will fit in your lineup?
You would think so. You would think
and
so.
And, I mean, to be honest, I missed it too, so, like, I can't hate, right? Like,
yeah.
I thought don't basically...
don't be throwing stones there, Blarson.
Right. I didn't think Jeff Green would be good, but I thought Ed Davis would be.
Yeah.
I was pretty out on Jeff Green, but hey, for the minimum, whatever. I was really out on Nigel Williams-Goss as an idea. And
yeah, that seemed weird.
That's a weird move still, but like, again, it's, like the three, that's the thing, is like Jeff Green, Emmanuel Mudiay, and Nigel Williams-Goss, your three like minimum pickups. And I guess then you can add on Mieoni to the bottom of that and Stanton Kidd and Juwan Morgan and all that. Like when you have six players at the end of your bench that aren't doing anything, it makes it tough.
That's a lot.
And so, that's the thing with minimum guys, and that's what we knew, that like, hey, once you trade Derek Favors and trade, you know, three different pieces for Mike Conley, like, you're going to be really thin. And the Jazz went from a deep team to a really thin team.
Yeah.
We knew that. But they haven't done a good job of getting talent out of the minimum like other teams have, quite frankly. You know, Honestly, the Houston Rockets have.
Yep.
And the Jazz haven't. And that's a big difference in their teams right now.
I guess along those lines, trade deadline is over, but buyout market coming right up. You see anyone out there on the horizon who can help kind of improve in that area?
I don't think the Jazz will get players that other teams are competing for.
Darren Collison is not coming here?
So, no, he's not. Neither are, you know, like if the Cavs, and I saw the report, the Cavs aren't going to waive Tristan Thompson, but even if they did, like Tristan Thompson would sign in LA with the Clippers, you know, like,
because
the Jazz only have the minimum to offer. And if players get a choice, they're going to go to LA rather than Utah because they want nice weather and also a better team, quite frankly.
Yep.
You might get the seventh best player on the market. Honestly, Epe Udo is a real possibility. It's just whether or not the Jazz want him, but like waving Ed Davis or waving Nigel Williams-Goss and picking up Epe Udo makes some sense.
I wouldn't mind having Epe back in.
He's not a rolling lineup, a rolling big. So like that's kind of a problem. You got to figure out what you want to do with your bench then.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't mean you could have kind of a defensive identity for 48 minutes, which this team doesn't have right now.
Yeah, he wouldn't be whistled for a foul every 4.8 seconds. Like someone
harsh.
Which not entirely his fault. Partly his fault. Not entirely.
It will like yeah.
He gets no benefit of the doubt right now. Which is partly because he's a young guy who, like, doesn't.
And partly because he's late.
And, right, that's the other component of it. Like, I know people think that Tony Bradley gets, like, the biggest raw deal from the refs, and it's like, well, like, get there a half second earlier.
It's honestly a little bit like Dante. Yeah. Like, people thought Dante was being screwed by the refs, too. And, like, maybe some of it is that's true, but also that's just because he wasn't actually all that good at getting in the right defensive position at times.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe we'll be getting Epe back. I know that you personally would love for the recently bought out Trey Burke to make a triumphant, glorious return.
Yeah, but that's not happening.
We can hope, though. Call up Dennis right now. Call up Justin. Talk them into it.
That won't work.
I know they'll listen to you.
They won't listen. They definitely won't listen to Trey Burke's agent, I'll tell you that much. yeah, I mean, look. Trey Burke's not a good player. Guys, how many battles does Howell Neto have to win for us to just think Howell Neto is a better player than Trey Burke? Because they're now it's now two coaches. Do we have to put them together like in the CBA and see if that works? The CBA is not even a league anymore. I guess there's a Chinese basketball.
Maybe
league.
he can sign with the Big Three.
That's probably where he's gonna sign next, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, look,
I hope so.
Trey Burke, it's weird because he actually did score decently well for the Sixers this year, and even then, and their fans are all up in arms that Brett Brown's not playing Trey Burke instead of Howell Neto, and yet Trey Burke keeps playing Howell Neto. Like it's exactly the same stuff. Like fans see the scoring and they like him and they like the name, and then Howell Neto's just a better player.
The cult of points per game.
The church of points.
I like cults better. Cults are more fun than churches.
Is that true? I don't know. There are pros and cons to cults versus churches.
Take my word for it, Andy.
Are you in a cult? That would explain a lot of your choices.
I'll let you come to your own conclusions.
You can't shrug on the podcast. That doesn't work as a form of expression in this medium.
See? You brought it up.
What a NBA life we lead. I'm sure so many people listen to this podcast because they always do really well when the Jazz are struggling.
Yeah. Tons and tons of listeners and readers right now.
The good news is we've definitely made people feel worse about it.
That's true. We were not comforting at all. We provided no silver linings or rays of sunshine.
Like, if they do figure it out... Sorry, we should just end this podcast. It's possible they figure it out, I guess, and, like, get the blender going and all that cool, fun stuff again. But, like, just a lot of things have to change in order for that to
We're definitely being negative right now. There's some definite recency bias going on as a result of, like, the deficiencies that we're seeing during the streak. They're not as bad as they're playing right now. They're also not as good as they were during that 10-game winning streak in that 19 of 21 stretch.
Yeah.
They're somewhere in the middle. Probably closer to, you know, the good team than the bad team, definitely. Whether that's good enough to fulfill people's expectations, I mean, if the expectation is, as Rudy Gobert likes to tell us, winning a championship, then no, that won't be good enough. But, you know, that's why they play the games. We'll see how the rest of the season goes. There's, you know, you never know. Stranger things have happened.
Yep, that is true.
And on that note...
What is the stranger thing that's happened? I guess the Nationals won the World Series this year.
Thank you for bringing that
up. Are you sad about that? Are you a fan of one of the teams?
I am a fan of the Atlanta Braves.
Oh.
Who won the NL East.
That's right.
Over the Nationals. And then, were terrible in the playoffs.
Yep, well.
And then saw a team who they finished ahead of go on to win it all. Not disappointed about that at all. Doesn't still...
Nope, but you're a Lakers fan and don't deserve any success or happiness in the world. I'm sorry.
I will have to console myself with that coming up. There are things afoot with them.
True that. Yeah. Let's wrap this up. This has been the Weekly Run. I'm Andy Larson. This is Eric Walden. You can always subscribe to the Salt Lake Tribune at sltribune.com/subscribe. For now, we're out. See you guys.